From the University of Kansas, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio.
Support for KPR comes from the historic Eldridge Hotel, offering dining experiences and gift cards this holiday season. Menus and details online at eldridgehotel.com.
40 degrees in Lawrence, 37 in Emporia. You're listening to KPR. The time is 6:06. From the University of Kansas, this is KPR, Kansas Public Radio. We broadcast at 91.5 FM in Lawrence, 91.3 FM in Junction City. We are always online at kansaspublicradio.org.
Support for KPR comes from LMH Health's new cancer center, offering cancer clinical trials and comprehensive treatment options, all under one roof. More information is available at lmh.org/cancercare.
Thanks so much for joining us this evening. Coming up in our next half hour, an update of news headlines at 6:30, straight up. Then at 6:36, an appreciation of the work of Rob Reiner. He made a virtue of virtuosity. He directed diverse hits such as When Harry Met Sally, Stand By Me, A Few Good Men, This Is Spinal Tap, Misery. He also was an actor. We will remember his career with Bob Mondello coming up on KPR.
Support for KPR comes from Eastside European, an owner-operated repair shop specializing in BMW and Mini at 9th and Delaware in East Lawrence, servicing other select European vehicles as well. More at eastside-european.com.
Following All Things Considered this evening on your KPR One stations, a special celebration of Hanukkah music. Candles Burning Brightly. That's at 7 o'clock on your KPR One stations, followed by an hour of classics live. If you're joining us on KPR Two tonight, stay tuned at 7 o'clock for This American Life. Lows in the upper 20s tonight, highs in the lower 50s tomorrow. It is 40 degrees in Lawrence. The time is 6:20.
From NPR News.
Tune in tomorrow, 5 to 9 a.m. on your KPR station's morning edition is what you will hear. Matthew Algia will have your regional news.
72% of NPR listeners value public radio as an important community service. Support your community and promote your business by sponsoring KPR. Learn more at sponsorship.kansaspublicradio.org.
News headlines are coming up in just about 30 seconds. It is 39 degrees in Lawrence, 41 in Manhattan. It is 6:30.
Device. This is NPR.
For Kansas Public Radio News, I'm Laura Lorson with your regional headlines. A Kansas Panasonic plant resumed operations today after law enforcement shot a stabbing suspect at the facility on Friday. Dylan Lyson reports on the incident at the electric vehicle battery plant in DeSoto.
Panasonic officials say the incident occurred in a part of the plant known as Wing 2. It's still under construction. Production in Wing 1 was minimally affected and is fully operational. The Johnson County Sheriff's Office identified the deceased man as 55-year-old Jonathan Lunsford of Blue Springs, Missouri. The Sheriff's Office says the incident is still under investigation. The shooting occurred while deputies were responding to a reported stabbing at the plant. A stabbing victim was transported to a hospital in critical condition. For the Kansas News Service, I'm Dylan Lyson in Overland Park.
A leader of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation says the Kansas-based tribe will try to get out of a $30 million contract with federal immigration enforcement. A tribal-owned business had secured the deal to design detention centers for ICE. In a video posted on Facebook, Tribal Council Chairman Joseph Zeke Rupnik said the tribe's legal counsel is now exploring options to exit the contract. He called Indian reservations the government's first attempt at detention centers.
So we must ask ourselves why we would ever participate in something that mirrors the harm and trauma once done to our people.
The tribe had said the project did not align with its values as a sovereign nation. Kansas Senator Jerry Moran says Boeing officials told him today they don't plan to push back against a federal cap on planes built in Wichita. Meg Britton Mellish has that story.
Boeing has been limited in the number of 737 MAX jets it can produce since 2024. That's when the door plug of a Boeing plane blew off mid-flight in Oregon. Boeing's $8 billion purchase of Spirit was seen as a way to better control production. Moran says Boeing officials tell him there's still a backlog of planes.
My understanding from conversations as recent as this morning, Boeing is not interested in increasing that cap at the moment. And, you know, one of the things that was highlighted is the fuselages that still remain here in Wichita.
Moran brought U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy on a tour of the Boeing campus in Wichita. Duffy oversees the Federal Aviation Administration, which capped Boeing at 42 jetliners a month. I'm Meg Britton-Mellish.
The forecast for northeast and east central Kansas, cold temperatures overnight with a low in the upper 20s. For tomorrow, sunshine with a high in the lower 50s. Lows around 30 tomorrow night, highs in the mid-50s for Wednesday. Upper 40s are the high we expect on Thursday. No precipitation in the forecast through at least Sunday. It's 40 degrees on the KU campus in Lawrence. The time is 6:35.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
It's Michelle Martin. Every weekday morning, my Morning Edition co-host and I have some questions.
What do you say to that concern from voters that there needs to
be... Can this squarely be laid on the feet of the government shutdown, or are there deeper problems?
Do you agree it's important for government officials to be truthful before Congress?
Get information, context, accountability on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Can catch Morning Edition tomorrow, 5 to 9 a.m. Drop by anytime. We'll get you caught up on the latest national, international, and regional news. From the University of Kansas, this is Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 FM in Lawrence. Also at 99.5 FM in Manhattan, lots of other frequencies too. Always online at kansaspublicradio.org. We still have 11 minutes of All Things Considered still to come. 7:01, you will be hearing Candles Burning Brightly on your KPR 1 stations. If you're joining us on KPR 2, stay tuned at 7 o'clock for This American Life.
Support for KPR comes from LMH Health Primary Care, providing care for patients at every stage of life across northeastern Kansas. More information at lmh.org/primary.
Clear and cold tonight with a low in the upper 20s. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high in the lower 50s. Lows around 30. Tomorrow night, highs in the mid-50s are forecast for Wednesday.
Support for KPR comes from Kansas City PBS, featuring Nick Haines and local guest experts sharing insights and context around major news stories on Weekend Review. Available to stream on demand on the PBS app.
It is 41 degrees in Topeka at 10 minutes before 7.
Holiday romance this year, so long. Meet me in St. Louis. Hello. Meet me in D.C.
This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from Fisher Investments. Fisher's dedicated team of specialists provide resources on investing, retirement income, estate planning, and more. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing extraordinarily creative individuals whose ideas, solutions, and discoveries expand people's expectations of what's possible. MacFound.org. And from Heifer International, where people can donate animal gifts to families living in poverty. Whether it's a goat, chicken, or cow, each gift is intended to help families earn a sustainable income. Heifer.org/NPR.
The holidays can throw our usual routines up in the air, but here's one ritual you can keep to stay centered and informed. Listen weekdays to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Join us tomorrow, 5 to 9 a.m. on your KPR stations for Morning Edition. Your local host will be Matthew Algio. We're live. We're local. We are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence 91.5, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia 89.7, KANV and KANV HD1, Olsburg Junction City, 91.3, KANQ Chanute, 90.3. Listen on the web at kansaspublicradio.org or tell your smart speaker to play Kansas Public Radio.
Support for KPR comes from the Lead Center, with gift certificates available for upcoming events, including Peppa Pig, My First Concert, plus Broadway shows of Kinky Boots and Chicago the Musical. Details are at lead.ku.edu.
Stay with us. Coming up next, special programming for Hanukkah. Candles burning brightly. Great music, great stories. It's all coming up here on KPR. It will be followed by Classics Live.
Support for KPR comes from Spider Art Constructors, offering custom concrete patio work across the KPR listening area. More information about available services is at Spider Art, Spider with a Y, SpiderArtConstructors.com.
Clear and cold tonight with a low in the upper 20s. Tomorrow we're expecting a high in the lower 50s. Lows around 30 tomorrow night, into the mid-50s for Wednesday, upper 40s for Thursday. It's 7:01. Candles Burning Brightly is next.
From American Public Media, this is Candles Burning Brightly, a celebration of Hanukkah, the Jewish festival of lights.
Welcome to Candles Burning Brightly, a celebration of Hanukkah, the Jewish festival of lights. I'm Mindy Rantner. Hanukkah is an 8-day feast of rededication and consecration, inspired by a series of historical events dating back to the time when the Second Temple stood in Jerusalem. It's always a pleasure to gather at the darkest time of year to shed a little light and to enjoy special foods and stories with those who are dear to us. The candles are lit at dusk and placed on the windowsill so that the light can be seen by passers-by. In a touching Yiddish song by Solomon Golub, the family gathers, and as he puts flame to wick, the father sings, "Blessed are you." After that, a cantorial rendition of the blessings chanted on each of the 8 nights of the holiday. If you want to light candles for Hanukkah, you'll need a special kind of candelabrum called a menorah. The one in the temple back in ancient times was made of pure gold. Most people these days have menorahs made of brass or ceramic or silver. There's one type that's meant specifically for Hanukkah. It's known as a chanukiah, and has places for 9 candles, one of which lights all the others. Each night, a candle is added from right to left and kindled from left to right, and pretty soon the menorah is ablaze with light. One more thing about these candles, they are never to be extinguished and instead are allowed to burn out. So, if you remember where you put your menorah last year, we can get started. If you can't find it, though, you might be in a situation similar to that of a certain man on a mission in a story by Howard Schwartz, read by Theodore Bickel. It's called The Lost Menorah.
The silver menorah had been in Reb Nosson's family for 400 years, and family tradition held that it was even older than that. Needless to say, this menorah was precious in the eyes of Reb Nosson, and so he was clutched with fear when he discovered on the morning of Erev Chanukah that it was missing. How could such a thing happen? Reb Nosson and his wife looked everywhere, but it was not to be found. Then Reb Nosson's wife recalled that a man who had been collecting trash to leave at the dump had come to the house a few days before with a covered wagon. Reb Nosson's wife had filled several sacks with things for him to take away, sacks of the same kind in which the menorah had been stored. Somehow he must have taken the sack with the menorah as well and carried it off to the dump. When Reb Nosson realized that this was the only explanation, he was devastated, for the menorah must now lie at the bottom of the deep valley that served Bratslav as the town dump. There he was certain it would never be found. And when this likely truth sank in, Reb Nosson became dejected. He left the house and sat under a bare tree, sinking into gloom and melancholy. When Reb Nosson's wife saw how this loss had harmed him, she could not bear it. She blamed herself. So she went to Reb Nachman in tears and told him all that had taken place. When Reb Nachman heard what she had to say, he left his home at once and came to Reb Nosson, who sat blankly at the foot of the tree. So lost was he in his grief that he did not even notice Reb Nachman standing above him, and he was greatly startled when the Rebbe spoke and said, "Why are you sitting here, Nosson, when it is almost Chanukah, and you do not even have a menorah with which to light the candles?" When Reb Nosson heard these words, he was startled. He leaped to his feet in anger, and then he realized that it was Reb Nachman who had spoken. But he could not understand why the Rebbe would rub salt in his wounds, and said, "Why? Why must you remind me of this, Rebbe, at such a moment, when I have sustained such a great loss?" And Reb Nachman said, "Because, Nosson, the menorah cannot be considered lost until someone has searched for it." What do you mean, Rebbe?" said Nosson. "Surely you do not think it possible that it's to be found?" "Why not, Nosson?" said Reb Nachman. "If it is possible for the coffin of Joseph to be recovered, even though it had sunk to the bottom of the Nile, surely it is possible for this precious menorah to be found. Waste no time brooding, Nosson, for if you do not find it by Chanukah, then it will surely be lost for good." Now, Chanukah would begin that very day at sunset, and in that valley was piled 50 years of trash. Still, Reb Nosson was suddenly filled with hope and determination, and he took leave of Reb Nachman and hurried off to borrow a horse so that he could complete the task in time. He made the old horse trot as swiftly as it could, but it was noon by the time he reached the valley where the trash was dumped. He tied the horse to a tree and slowly climbed down the sides of the valley until he reached the bottom. There, he was overwhelmed by the vast piles of trash, which were spread out as far as his eye could see. Still, Reb Nosson refused to be discouraged, and he waded into the trash, digging with his bare hands. Before long, his hands were raw and sore, and he wished he had remembered a shovel, for in his haste he had not brought one. All of a sudden, Reb Nosson saw a shovel sticking up from the trash. He rushed to it and pulled it out, and was completely astonished to discover that it was not only a shovel, but his own shovel as well, a rusty one that he had once thrown away. Then he knew that the shovel was a sign from heaven that there was still hope, and he continued to dig with confidence and determination. For 3 hours he dug and dug, till suddenly he came upon a sack which resembled one of his own. And when he tore it open, he was blinded for an instant by the reflection of silver in the sun, for he had found the lost menorah at last. Then, with tears rolling down his face and his clothes filthy from the trash, he held the menorah and raised his voice in prayer. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one.
The late singer, actor, and activist Theodore Bickel read Howard Schwartz's timeless story, The Lost Menorah. This is Candles Burning Brightly. I'm Mindy Rantner. Why did this holiday come to be, and why is light so important to its observance? Hanukkah represents one of the first documented efforts in history to resist the forces of cultural assimilation. More than 2,000 years ago, the Hellenistic Syrians overran Jerusalem with the express aim of subjugating the Jews and forcing them to abandon their religious practices, including Sabbath observance, dressing modestly, and keeping kosher, just to name a few. The troops of the Seleucid king Antiochus IV ransacked the temple and outlawed Judaism altogether. There were certainly those who opted to go along to get along, but the Jewish high priest Mattathias and his sons chose instead to organize a revolt. All of the events of the struggle transpired over a period of several years, during which Mattathias died, and his eldest son Judah, known as Judah Hamaccabee, or Judah the Hammer, took up leadership of the Jews who were determined to preserve their way of life. In the end, the Maccabees prevailed and found there was much to do to restore and re-sanctify the temple. There was another pressing problem. In order to keep the Ner Tamid, or eternal light, burning in the temple, there was only one cruse of sacramental oil in all of Jerusalem. Under ordinary circumstances, that small amount of oil wouldn't have lasted for more than a day, but it's said to have lasted for 8 days, enough time for more to be obtained. So that, in so many words, explains the importance of light. It also gives us a reason to prepare foods cooked in oil. Don't worry, we'll eat and enjoy later. In the meantime, we're warmed by the glow of the Hanukkah lights. Thank you.
Thank you. ocho candelas para mí.
The vocal pyrotechnics of Chanticleer in Steve Barnett's sizzling arrangement of a Hanukkah tune by Flory Jagoda called Ocho Candelicas. It's sung in Ladino, a language spoken by the Jews of the Iberian Peninsula more than 500 years ago. In the shadow of the Inquisition, these Sephardic Jews carried their language and traditions with them as they dispersed around the Mediterranean basin and elsewhere. It's true that the synagogue liturgy includes special prayers recited at Hanukkah, but the observance of the holiday is really based at home, which reminds me, are you getting a little hungry? No matter what your food traditions may be, there's something just for you when Candles Burning Brightly continues from 8 p.m.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia, as well as online at kansaspublicradio.org. You're listening to Candles Burning Brightly here on KPR. More on the way. No matter how you get your news of the day, whether that's in your car, at the office, at home, or on the go, your support ensures that KPR will always be your place for news about the things that really matter to you, whether they occur around the globe or down the street. KPR never lets up in its commitment to serve our listeners because you matter. Make a difference? Donate now at that website, kansaspublicradio.org. Tonight, clear skies, a low of 27 degrees. Sunny tomorrow with a high of 52. For Tuesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 30. Temperatures in the mid-50s on Wednesday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
Welcome back to Candles Burning Brightly. I'm Mindy Rantner. One very important cultural component of many Jewish holidays is food. And where your family has its roots might influence the dishes you like to prepare and enjoy. Of course, it never hurts to try something new. So we're going to head for that room in the house where magic happens. The Hanukkah kitchen is filled with the fragrance of foods cooking in oil. Some are sweet, others savory, and still others, a little bit of both.
Quítaltas, meteltas, las muchachas meten vas. En el mes de Hanukkah, suriaremos la cefa. Quita la gallina de la cocina, quita la gallina de la cocina. Dale el caldo a la vecina, que le sea melesina. En el mes de Hanukkah, suriaremos la cefa.
La una quita el aceite de un teneque. La otra quita la harina de un saco hasta diez para hacer los burmuelos en los días de Hanukkah.
den vas, en el mes de Hanukkah, suriaremos la cepa. Quitatas, metetas, las muchachas meten vas, en el mes de Hanukkah, suriaremos la cepa.
I am Hasse Siegel. Up till now, you heard the music of Hanukkah, you heard the sound of Hanukkah, but now we're going to have the taste of Hanukkah. And we talk about taste of Hanukkah, we think about only one thing, is about the latkes, the very famous latke that we remember on the holiday of Hanukkah. Now, where does the name latke come from? Where does it arrive from? It arrives from a latte. A latte is a patch. You know, the people in the shtetlach used to wear clothes always covered with a lot of patches, and they covered a lot of torn things, and they filled up a lot of empty spaces. And a latke is the same thing. It fills up empty spaces, not on your clothes, but in your stomach. So that is a little patch, a latkele. And that's what we're eating. Now we want to know why we have the latke made of potatoes, not any other things. The main important food that the people ate in the shtetlach was always potatoes, bulbas. There is even a song that tells you every day the people ate bulbas. They had the Sintik bulbas, Montik bulbas, Dinstik Mitvah bulbas, Donoshnik bulbas, Freitik bulbas, Shabbos Akugalefum bulbas. See, I don't need the chorus for my voice, you can see it. And it shows you that the people ate bulbas all the time. So what do you think is going to be the latkes made of? Of bulbas, because that was very tasty, very accessible. Now, who discovered the bulba latke? That was easy for me to find out. For my family, my great-grandmother's sister-in-law. You may have heard of her. Her name was Chaya Bela. She came from a small town, Kupershek, and everybody knew her because they called her Chaya Bela the Latke. She most beautiful latkes in the world. She made latkes even in the middle of the year, so they named her Chaya Bela the Latke. And because she made such good latkes, I have the recipe. Nobody else has the recipe. And because you came to hear me, I'll share it with you. I take three medium-sized potatoes. I take an onion, an egg, and a quarter of a cup of flour. And we take out the old-fashioned food processor. And we put it in here, and we start taking a few potatoes, and you grate it. You grate the potatoes, no problem. The potatoes are fine, they're coming out smooth, and you have to be very careful not to keep the hand too close to it, otherwise you'll have fleshy latkes. I don't think you're allowed to have it. And you do take afterwards the onion. That is a little bit harder. You see, every Jewish affair, every joyous occasion, we share tears. It comes to making latkes, that's enough that we have potatoes to grind, so we have to have the onions. So you look away, or put on glasses, or even better, ask your husband to do it for you. Put on the oil, about 2 spoons of oil, make it hot enough. Now, I forgot to tell you that to the latke that you put in things, the forbidden food too, like you put in salt, that's good for a high blood pressure. Put in an egg, it's good for cholesterol. So the most important thing when you put in ingredients in, don't tell your doctor what the latke is made of. See, if he doesn't know, it doesn't harm him. And meanwhile, you'll enjoy and have a real good latke. And the latke is being made already. I have here a ready-made product. So I made it, and I have it ready. And you know, I don't like when people call latkes pancake. A pancake is not a latke. A pancake looks like a sick latke. A pancake looks like a latke that has the mumps. Now, we make the latkes and we put it on a plate afterwards, and you can put it as a side dish, but most of it people do it as a main dish. And you serve it that applesauce or sour cream, whatever you want to, it'll go. You can eat it without anything too. Nobody complained yet. Now, you put it afterwards on a paper towel to take up, to absorb the fats. But the most important thing, don't put all the latkes on one plate and put it on the table. People start grabbing it. Nothing will be left. So what you do, you take a big plate and put the latkes and bring over to each one separate and give them a few latkes and move away. Because it will be no end to it. And a little of the latkes you put away for later for yourself when people will get out of your house.
The unforgettable Hasia Siegel making potato latkes in a kitchen of sorts, right on the stage of Jordan Hall at the New England Conservatory. A feat all by itself, really, given the tantalizing aroma wafting out over a hungry live audience. It's always good to keep in mind Hasia's wise advice to serve the latkes to each of your guests and to make sure to keep some for yourself. So the question remains, will it be applesauce or sour cream or both? Before that, Theodore Bickel and friends invited us into the kitchen with Quitaltas, a song in Ladino about making lots of Hanukkah treats, Sephardic style. This is Candles Burning Brightly. I'm Mindy Rantner. As part of our Hanukkah celebration, we've already taken care of the candles, and we've had a bite to eat. So now it's time for singing. The musicians of Voice of the Turtle have a little tune by Flory Jagoda that we can learn in no time. La, 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 la.
La 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 la. Excellent. The second part is la 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 la. Let's do that.
La 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 la.
Good. Let's do the whole chorus.
La 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 la.
Yeah.
So now that we're all warmed up, we get to some of what you might call the signature tunes of Hanukkah. Probably the best known of these is Ma'oz Tzur, meaning Rock of Ages or Fortress Rock. It's one of those texts that exists in a number of different melodic settings. The words are thought to have been written sometime in the 13th century and are attributed to Mordechai ben Yitzchak Halevi, a rabbi and poet who emigrated to Mainz, Germany from his native Iraq. Amongst the Jews of Mainz, Reb Mordechai is said to have witnessed terrible acts against his community during the Crusades. Perhaps it's that experience that gives his words so much power.
Tikon veste filosi.
just a handful of the many settings over the centuries of the traditional Hanukkah text, Maoz Tzur. The festivities for Hanukkah also include playing a game with a special spinning top called Sevivon in Hebrew and Dreidel in Yiddish. The Hebrew letters on the four sides are Nun, Gimel, He, and Shin, which stand for the words Nes Gadol Hayasham, a great miracle happened there. Now, if you have one of those tops from Israel, the letters signify a great miracle happened here.
I did it.
What a fabulous celebration of Hanukkah, Jewish festival of lights. The glow of the candles in the window, a touching story so beautifully told. Lots of good things to eat, and plenty of voices raised in song. Our time together on Candles Burning Brightly has come to an end too soon. We've enjoyed the company and the talents of Essential Voices USA, Chicago a cappella, cantor Hans Blumenthal, actor Theodore Bickel, the Knights Chamber Orchestra, and more. To learn all about the music and the performers you heard on this program, go to yourclassical.org/holiday. You'll also find a special holiday photo gallery, and you can listen to Candles Burning Brightly again whenever you like. I'm Mindy Rantner. Thanks for your company, and happy Hanukkah. This is APM, American Public Media.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. KANU in KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. Listen online at kansaspublicradio.org or tell your smart speakers to play Kansas Public Radio. Hope you've enjoyed this evening's broadcast of Candles Burning Brightly. Stay tuned for Classics Live. Then, at 9 p.m., it'll be time for Jazz with Bob McWilliams. Tonight, clear skies, a low of 27 degrees. Looks like sunny tomorrow, with a high of 52. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
Welcome to Classics Live from Kansas Public Radio. I'm Cordelia Brown, saving you a seat here in the Polsky Theater of the Midwest Trust Center for the Performing Arts for a very interesting and fun saxophone recital with everything from Danny Boy to some tangos featuring longtime professor of saxophone at KU, Vince Ganoyak, with his KU colleague of collaborative piano, Ellen Summer. First, Dr. Ganoyak tells us a little bit about the history of the saxophone.
As a boy in early 19th century Belgium, Adolf Sax was hit on the head by a brick. He also swallowed a needle, fell down a flight of stairs, toppled onto a burning stove, and accidentally drank some sulfuric acid. When he grew up, he invented the saxophone. Only a child that familiar with adversity, contend critics of the saxophone, could have foisted such a contraption on an unsuspecting world. In about 1842 is when Adolf Sax invented the saxophone as a hybrid instrument. It's conical in shape, and it's made of brass, but it has pads that cover these tone holes, and it uses a woodwind mouthpiece and a reed to get the sound. So it actually is a woodwind instrument, not a brass instrument. He invented it as a middle voice in the woodwind family, and he intended that it would be played in symphony orchestras as well as concert bands. It never really quite took off in the symphony orchestras. There are saxophone solos now and then. He had wanted it to be that, so he invented a family in the keys of C and F for the orchestra, and another set of family in B flat and E flat for use in bands. And that's the family that we have with us today, is B flat and E flat instruments. The saxophone came over to this country right around the turn of the century. And that was a time when there was a lot going on over here, and particularly the very early start of jazz music. And so saxophone caught on right away because it was much louder than a clarinet or something like that. So a lot of people went, wow, this is cool. And it has been a leading voice in jazz and popular music for many, many years. The saxophone is the newest member of the woodwind family, and it is without question the most versatile of all the wind instruments. The program I have prepared for you today contains several different styles of music for the saxophone, and I hope there is something for everyone in the audience. The first piece on today's program was composed by French composer Paul Maurice, who taught at the Paris Conservatory for several years. She composed this suite for the famous French saxophonist Marcel Moore, who is also teaching at the conservatory. It is a suite with beautiful melodies and intricate rhythms that portray five different regions in southern France. The first movement is a girl's dance modeled after the farandole, a popular folk dance in Provence. The second movement is Song for My Love, not really an affirmative statement of love, but questioning, will she love me? The opening notes are the open strings of the guitar. The gypsy girl in the third movement is beautiful, with a fiery, almost snarling side of her personality. The Sighing Souls of Aliscamp conveys a tree-lined dirt path bordered with Gallo-Roman tombs. The opening notes of the saxophone are a mournful sigh, like the wind blowing through the trees. Written just after the death of a friend, it is the first movement to be composed for this suite and is seminal for the entire suite. Le Cabrenat is the large bee of the southern region of France. Listen at the end when the bee finally flies quickly away. Tableau de Provence. Thank you. Ordinarily, in a recital, we would have a chance to go off stage and catch our breath and mess around with the reed and the mouthpiece and all that stuff. Well, we don't really have time to do that, so I just have to do it right here in front of you. Sorry. So I have been playing the alto saxophone, and I brought along the soprano saxophone as well. And the soprano saxophone, they do make curved ones that are very cute. They're a little tiny, you know. But that kind of changed the sound of the saxophone a little bit to have all those curves in it. So they started making them straight, and it really has a more even sound and projects a little bit better. Some people think it projects too much better. So I hope that's not the case today. But it could be. Soprano is very high in pitch, and it's difficult to play, but it's a lot of fun as well. The most recent piece on today's program, And Everything Is Still, was composed by saxophonist Andy Scott, who gives these words at the beginning of the piece, gentle and spacious with poise. So I hope I can do it with poise. And everything is still. certainly one of the most prolific and popular Argentinian composers was Astor Piazzolla. These are two of his six tango etudes written originally for the flute. They are difficult rhythmically and technically, with beautiful melodic sections and several moments for artistic interpretation and nuance. I will be playing only the first two of the three listed, but in reverse order, number four followed by number three.
Thank you.
It's always such a pleasure working with Ellen. She's just a terrific musician, and she accompanies everybody, and she can play anything, you know? I mean, she's just absolutely remarkable. So it's a pleasure to be on the same stage as Ellen Summer. Okay, it's time to swab out again, sorry. I think all saxophone players just mess with stuff a lot, all the time. Reeds, ligatures, saxophones, you know, whatever, straps, you know. Anyway, composed by Australian composer Percy Aldrich Granger, Irish tune from County Derry is one of the most beautiful melodies, and you will recognize it as the song Danny Boy. Granger was not only a fan of British folk music, but was also a huge fan of the saxophone. In many of his wind band arrangements and compositions, he included as many as 6 different saxophones, from the soprano all the way down to the bass. Percy moved to the United States in 1914 and taught at a few different universities. He was a conductor at the University of Kansas Midwestern Music Camp for a few years in the 1960s. At that time, he brought this piece, arranged for wind band, and it became the closing song for every music camp since then. This is Irish tune from County Derry. Thank you. I have one more piece to play for you. And I thought, probably I have not played enough notes. So I wanted to play something that had quite a few more. Saxophonists just do that, you know? I don't know what it is. We're all addicted to playing a lot of notes all the time. So anyway, to close my recital, I have chosen a version of The Carnival of Venice by Jules Demersman, who is one of the earliest composers of saxophone music in France. This particular one is arranged by American saxophonist Fred Hemke, who was the saxophone teacher at Northwestern University for many, many years, and he just passed away recently. So this is Carnival of Venice. Okay.
What a fun saxophone recital here in the Polsky Theater at Johnson County Community College. Ending with the showpiece, Introduction and Variation on the Carnival of Venice. Playing the alto saxophone, and there for a little bit the soprano sax, it was Professor Emeritus of Saxophone at KU, Vince Ganoyak, with pianist Ellen Summer, who is head of the Collaborative Piano Department at the KU School of Music. Thanks for joining us for this Doreen Morande professional recital here in the Midwest Trust Center. JCCC offers a series of these free concerts on most Mondays at noon during the spring and fall semesters. Chuck Smith, one of KPR's recording engineers, recorded the show for Classics Live, which is our weekly show that brings the best in live and local concerts to you. I'm Cordelia Brown, your Classics Live producer. Broadcasts of Classics Live are a production of Kansas Public Radio. a KPR recording made in the summer of 2025, featuring the strings of the Sunflower Music Festival Chamber Orchestra, with special guest conductor Joanne Falletta. That was Gustav Holst's St. Paul's Suite. This has been Classics Live from KPR, Kansas Public Radio.
Support for Classics Live on KPR comes from the University of Kansas, creating the future one discovery at a time. Information about KU programs and research is at ku.edu. From the University of Kansas, this is your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. As well as online at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us on a Monday evening. Stay tuned for NPR News, followed by jazz. Tonight, clear skies, a low of 27 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with a high of 52. This is KPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. President Trump is suing the BBC for $10 billion. In a lawsuit filed in Florida, he argues the British broadcaster defamed him in a documentary by splicing together parts of a speech he made ahead of the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot. The BBC has apologized to Trump. Its director general and news CEO stepped down amid scrutiny of the documentary. Police in Providence are asking for the public's help identifying the shooter who opened fire at Brown University Saturday, killing two and injuring nine others, Ocean State Media's David Wright reports.
The FBI and local authorities are going door to door in the neighborhood around Brown, asking local businesses and residents to share doorbell camera footage from Saturday that might show the suspect. Providence police released new images of a person of interest, some of them taken hours before the shooting, just two blocks away. His face masked, but his eyes visible, Rhode Island Attorney General Peter Nerona.
These investigations are like threads that you pull on a garment, and some of them you pull and the garment doesn't open up, and other ones you pull and the garment comes undone.
The FBI is now offering a $50,000 reward for information leading to an arrest and conviction. For NPR News, I'm David Wright in Providence.
A court battle between the Justice Department and California over the state's new congressional map began today. California voters decisively approved the map favoring Democrats last month. The Trump administration accuses California of racial gerrymandering by favoring Hispanic voters. California's map is a counter to Republican-led efforts in Texas and Missouri backed by President Trump. Hundreds of people in Washington state are evacuating after a levee broke on a flooded river there. This comes after nearly a week of intense flooding in the state. Casey Martin of member station KUOW reports.
Officials first noticed water pooling up next to the levee on Friday. The Green River and other rivers through western Washington have been high or flooded because of heavy rain. John Taylor, director of King County Natural Resources and Parks, said the levee gave in to the water pressure.
It looks like a V in the levee. It started at the bottom and kind of caved in, and it looks like a stream running through the levee.
Crews are patching the break with large nylon sacks that soak up water. So far, a little over 1,000 residents and businesses nearby have been told to evacuate. That adds to the nearly 100,000 people in western Washington who have been told to escape floodwaters since last week. For NPR News, I'm Casey Martin in Seattle.
U.S. officials say Washington has agreed to provide security guarantees to Ukraine as part of a peace deal to end Russia's nearly four-year war. Questions over Ukraine's post-war security and the fate of occupied territories have been the main obstacles in negotiations. This is NPR News. Spain's government has fined Airbnb $75 million for unlicensed tourist rentals. Officials say many listings didn't have proper license numbers. The move is part of Spain's efforts to regulate short-term rental companies amid a housing affordability crisis, especially in popular urban areas. Airbnb says it plans to challenge the fine in court. A new study finds tanning bed users are nearly three times as likely to develop melanoma, the deadliest form of skin cancer, compared to people who've never tanned indoors. And they're more likely to get it in unusual places like the lower back. NPR's Maria Godoy has more.
The study found the more often people visited the tanning bed, the higher the risk. Those with 10 to 50 visits had twice the risk of melanoma. If they had over 200 visits, their risk was more than eight times as high. Study co-author Hunter Shane of the University of California, San Francisco, says younger indoor tanners also had more DNA damage in their skin cells than people twice their age.
So women in their 30s and 40s, they had more mutations than people in their 70s and 80s from the general population. Basically, they somehow were able to cram in two lifetimes worth of UV damage in 30 years.
The findings appear in the journal Science Advances. Maria Godoy, NPR News.
Connecticut is working to become a destination for holiday movie fans by promoting towns featured in films by Hallmark and Lifetime. The Christmas Movie Trail features 22 towns where such films were made, like Wethersfield, where parts of Christmas on Honeysuckle Lane were shot. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. This is NPR. We'll be right back.
That's the Rencio Collective with the leader Rencio and her arrangement of the Wayne Shorter piece Blues a la Carte, opening tonight's Jazz in the Night on Kansas Public Radio. And some great soloists there, saxophonist Steve Wilson, trumpeter John Lake, pianist Adam Burbaum, and trombonist Nick Grinder in the Rencio Collective. I'm Bob McWilliams, and welcome to Jazz in the Night on KPR. We'll get into the holidays in just a bit with the singer and songwriter Olivia Van Goor and her song entitled Waiting Up for Santa. We've got Richard Wyant's trio with a little Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and later in the hour, music for the holidays from Joe Williams and the Heath Brothers. Right now, though, it's vibraphonist Mark Sherman. His new album this year is called Bop Contest, and he has two Cedar Walton pieces on the album. This one's called Martha's Prize. Thank you. vibraphonist Mark Sherman and Cedar Walton. Composition Martha's Prize from the new album by Mark Sherman, Bob Contest, with the great Ron Carter playing bass, and also terrific as well, Carl Allen on drums and Donald Vega piano. Vibraphonist Mark Sherman on Jazz in the Night. In about 10 minutes, we'll dive into the vinyl vaults, go back to 1977 for the debut recording of saxophonist Bob Mover. And up next, we've got a singer new to my ears, Olivia Van Goor, here on KPR. Support for Jazz in the Night on Kansas Public Radio comes from Dr. Stephen H. Chronister, Healing Smiles.